Shall I go on?
Yeah. Or do you want 2 minutes of silence? It's Friday, May the 3rd, and this is the Dutch News Podcast, your weekly chance to catch up with what's been going on here in the Netherlands. I'm Paul Peter, civil engineer and vergistourist, and with me today is not Gordon Derrick. He is, I think he's in the UK, right?
Probably. I have no idea where he is. He's just gone.
He's just gone. Yeah, no, he did. I think he left the country because of Koningsdag. I think he's in the UK. But yeah, you already heard her. We are joined by Robin Pascoe, Grand Dame of Dutch News and Weather Watcher. And let us start with your job title, Robin, because listeners might hear some noise in the background, right?
Yeah, we picked the right time to record as a thunderstorm is due to hit Amsterdam, and I'm very fond of weather, and I like thunderstorms, so you may hear it in the background, and I'm sorry if people do. I would really like to know why you're a vergistourist, which means you got it wrong, tourist. Where have you been?
Do you remember in, I think, 2013 when Willem-Alexander ascended the throne because Beatrix, abdicated. And Willem-Alexander changed the date of the national holiday from April 30th to April 27th because that was his birthday. April 30th was the birthday of not Beatrix, but her mother, Juliana. That meant that on April 30th, the following years, masses of tourists from all over the world with clearly outdated Lonely Planets showed up in Amsterdam dressed completely in orange because they read that you should be dressing in orange on April 30th. It was the case until a couple of years before. And vergistouristen, as we call them, so tourists who have it wrong, they were very regularly photographed in Amsterdam on April 30th, and people made a little bit fun of them. And I accidentally was wearing on April 30th some orange clothing, and I didn't realize that until someone pointed it out to me that if I remembered that we now have King's Day and it is on April 27th and no longer Queen's Day. It wasn't that I wasn't that intensely dressed in orange. I was only wearing orange socks, but still, those are orange clothing, of course. And I think you should just avoid wearing orange on April 30th for this.
Paul, I'm worried about the idea that you've got orange socks. I mean that's really pushing it a bit.
I have two pairs of orange socks, but I don't have any other.
Two pairs?
Yeah. But I don't have any other orange clothing, so I never wear orange on Koningsdag or when the Dutch national team plays. So, no, I am in when it comes to clothing, I am an anti-orangist.
Yeah, I'll join you on the anti-orangist as well.
And I also realized that the vergistourist is a dying concept, right? They are slowly getting extinct because I don't think it happens that often anymore. A couple of years ago, North Korea congratulated Willem-Alexander with Queen's Day on April 30th. That was a bit of a diplomatic faux pas, I guess. They didn't get the memo that we changed the date of our national holiday. Speaking of Koningsdag, did you celebrate it this year?
I had my best ever year at selling.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was extraordinary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a rather lot of... I always sell old clothes and stuff. This year, I had a whole bunch of stuff that belonged to my mother-in-law. I mean... You know, the stuff that's been in a box for 30 years. and I sold everything.
Oh, wow.
It was extraordinary. Fantastic. What can I say?
Vintage is a big hit, of course.
Yeah, but we're not talking clothes here. We're talking very strange little sort of old tins and miniature clogs. And
What was the strangest object in her collection?
There were some very odd paperweights. There was sort of just miscellaneous sort of bits of metal. She had a whole bunch of molds that were used in a chocolate factory to make things.
Really?
One of which was a footballer, which was, you know, really rusty, but that got bored. So I really don't know. My sort of ideas have changed. I shall be looking for rubbish to sell from now on rather than try and sell people nice things.
Exactly, yes. I was under the impression that everyone is always selling their junk on the free market. But you have picked the wrong business idea until now. Yes, just sell all your junk, and that will make people happy.
And the other thing is, you have to be cheap. So I sell everything for a euro.
So people get real
bargains then, you know. So that's great. And then they get very carried away because it's cheap, so they buy more and more. But, you know, extraordinary.
And next thing you know, you don't have any stuff on your blanket anymore.
Well, I have a table. We are quite upmarket. We have a table and a rack, you know, properly displayed. But
did you claim a spot a couple of days before? Did you write Bezet on the pavement?
I didn't, because I'm very lucky. I have friends who have a house and a good spot, so I can always go there. I don't need to do that sort of crack of dawn. Business.
So location is also key.
Location is very key. It's quite a quiet street, so people who come down there come looking for things.
Mm, yes.
So it was super successful. I used a Tiki this year as well. I had a QR code, you know, that people could just, you know, send it to me electronically, which was very exciting. So when I was doing my total at the end of the day, I would think, oh God, that's loads of money. And then I had a whole another bunch of money to add to it. So, very good all round.
And a Tiki is very Dutch as well.
Of
so
course.
I think you filled your Dutchness bingo card on Koningsdag.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it.
That brings us to the op-off of the week. This time it comes from Pieter Omtzigt. We already mentioned it. Last Saturday it was King's Day. The Netherlands celebrated the King's birthday. And the day is filled with age-old traditions, such as eating orange tompoeses, selling junk on the streets. Robin was very successful in doing that. And also getting massively drunk. I think I've seen at least 20 videos of people on sinking boats in the Amsterdam Canal. I think it was this year it was extremely busy on the canals, and that resulted in a lot of sinking boats and a lot of orange in the canals.
Yeah, I think there was quite a lot of that. I mean, we haven't, let's face it, you know, we've had crappy weather. It was quite warm on Saturday, so people kind of went a bit mad, I think. And the thunder is here with us now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I don't hear it, but maybe our listeners can hear it. The Twitter account of Nieuw Sociaal Contract, that is Pieter Omtzigt's party, tweeted a photo of an orange tompoes. They were wishing everyone a very happy King's Day, and this wouldn't have caused any uproar if it had stayed with just this photo. But the caption stated, "Free markets on King's Day are a cultural tradition. We believe cultural freedom is essential and should never be lost due to European regulations." This is what we mean by limit Europe. Well, it could very well have escaped your notice that the EU is trying to destroy King's Day, because of course they're not doing that in any way. The tweet raised a lot of eyebrows. It was massively ridiculed for NSA's quite transparent attempts to attract anti-EU voters in the upcoming European Parliament elections. It also reminded me a bit of the pre-Brexit days, when everyone started to claim all sorts of nonsense, populist madness about the European Union. Many felt that the NSA had been quite exposed by this. And late in the afternoon, the tweet was deleted due to the strong reactions, and it was replaced with a new one stating that the previous post about King's Day was an internal mistake and it should not have been posted. It took them almost half a day to realize that.
Do you think that perhaps their social media account manager had been at the beer or the Aperol rather too heavily during the day?
I think so too. He just tweeted this, he or she tweeted this, and just logged off perhaps even went for a boat, stepped on a boat in the Amsterdam Canal, sunk, and lost his phone. I think that is a plausible scenario.
That's why it took them, half a day to get around to sorting it out. How extraordinary. I mean, you do wonder sometimes, don't you?
This week, the formation had come to a complete standstill. Tensions are rising around the Remembrance Day ceremony on Damsk. Rutte flew to Istanbul and not for a vacation. The Netherlands seems to be doing poorly in terms of sustainability. Despite Gordon's absence, we still have a sports item, and chances of Dutch victory in Sweden seems to be dwindling by the day. Parliament is in recess this week, and that means work on putting together a new coalition government has been slowed until May 6th, when the final phase will begin. The four parties, those are the PVV of Geert Wilders, VVD of Dylan Jessogus, NSC of Pieter Omtzigt, BBB of Caroline van der Plas, they have been negotiating for 5 months now with several long breaks, and they are using the week off to prepare for the last week of talks, marathon talks. We could, I think, fairly say. According to informateur Richard van Zwol, he is one of the two people leading the negotiations, said that next week is the political trading week. They will have to make decisions on controversial issues and also lay the financial puzzle. So they still have plenty to do in a week time, or actually less than a week time, because we have, of course, Hemelvaart on Thursday. What's that in English again? I always forget that.
Ascension Day.
Ascension Day. Well, that's easy. Should be easy to remember. And also the day after that is also a day off usually, right? So they only have, I think, 3 effective days to finalize everything, because after that, Van Zwol and Dijkgraaf will also need a couple of days to actually write their report, which is due on Tuesday, I believe.
If they've got anything to write about, I start to wonder, you know. I mean, Paul, we are here. We have got the pressure on. We're having another holiday, apparently.
Yeah.
But they haven't sorted out anything, as far as I'm aware. Absolutely nothing.
No, they're still divided on several key issues. One of them, for example, is agriculture and what to do with the nitrogen crisis. In the past months, dealing with the manure mountain was added to the growing list of troubles for farmers. The EU scrapped the Netherlands exemption on the limit of manure production, and that added all sorts of other divisions within these four negotiating parties. And that comes on top of all the rest they already have, right? So what to do with support, military support for Ukraine, for example. You have on one side NSC and the PVV. They are very critical on spending so much money on the Ukraine. And on the other hand, you have VVD and BBB, who are basically very, 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 very outspoken in favor of this military aid. And that's just one issue. And it seems, you know, they seem to be. There are so many others, but these are just two, and they don't seem to have any sort of agreement on these issues. But the biggest stumbling point apparently is immigration and asylum. And remember, that was the area where everybody thought, oh, these four parties will easily come to a compromise because they are all immigration critical. But yeah. Do you really remember Ronald Plasterk's column in the Telegraaf the week after the election, after November 22nd? He wrote, yeah, these four parties basically agree on everything. It will be a very easy task, and we will have a government within a couple of weeks. Well, he was appointed informateur, and he didn't manage to bring them all on board. So even on the thing that we all think, yeah, they should be, this should be easy to solve, that's still a major issue.
But it isn't easy to solve, is it? Because there is no answer. The things that they all say they want to do, you can't do under EU law. So it's a question of compromise and changing. And Wilders has already said, I'm not going to compromise on it anymore. And there he was in Hungary, you know, last week, having a nice chat in front of a bunch of far-right friends of his, you know, spouting objectionable nonsense. And I don't know if you saw Trouw, you know, which is not the most outspoken Dutch newspaper, had a really strong column this week, editorial, saying, let's hope that the other three parties are listening to what he was talking about in Hungary, because, you know, they should be leaving the negotiating table, basically. I mean, come on, do you really? I mean, what have we reached? Have we reached any agreement, you know, anything at all?
Yeah, well, they seem to agree on a number of issues. For example, that the budget deficit should not exceed 2.8%. Under EU regulations, this is 3%, I believe, and the PVV has always been, you know, EU critical, so they thought they always said that this 3% threshold is nonsense. Well, the VVD and NSA, on the other hand, they are much more in favor of some sort of how do you say that, a good government finances. So this is clearly a compromise, and also they agree on cutting 200 million from the public broadcasting service, which is 1/5 of its budget. They also seem to agree on raising the maximum speed limit again to 130 kilometers an hour. It was reduced to 100 kilometers an hour, again due to the nitrogen issue. We can finally speed a little bit more on the Dutch roads. And interestingly enough, one of the informateurs, which is Albert Dijkgraaf, he was a former SGP MP, he once issued a motion to increase the speed limit to 135 kilometers an hour. So everyone in that room agreed on the 100.
And maybe they could
least.
Come to Amsterdam and get rid of our 30 kilometer an hour speed limit, where you're now overtaken by bicycles and people on fat bikes. It's extraordinary.
I haven't experienced yet, but it's probably surreal.
It's very surreal because you're there in your car and you're like, why are we going so slowly? And it's like, oh, this is the speed limit. It's really odd. Very strange. Okay, so, you know, we've got a little bit of kind of agreement on stuff that's not very important. Well, apart from the budget deficit.
Well, one thing is important, I think, that is cutting the own risk element in health insurance. That costs a lot of money. They will not be able to cover that with this 200 million euros from the public broadcaster. So they will need to find some way to finance that. This is a biggie if they really agree on this.
It might be something they've agreed on, but as we said, you know, the big stuff, they haven't got any clue. So, okay, it's quite likely, Paul, I would say, we're not going to get an agreement, or if we do, it'll fall apart very quickly. I mean, what happens now?
Yeah, well, the informateurs have said that there is only one binary option. Either way, whatever is on the table, they agree with it and a cabinet is formed, or they don't agree with it and they will find a different solution. And that is probably that Frans Timmermans, the leader of GroenLinks PvdA and also the second largest party in parliament, he will now have the initiative, probably, and that is he can form a government. And last weekend or two weekends ago, there was a big row about his speech at his party conference, where supposedly he had threatened Geert Wilders with violence. Well, that's absolutely nonsense, of course. But what he also said in that speech, and that was completely missed because of this row with Wilders, that was that he was finally open to form a government with the VVD, which is the third largest party. And if that's really true, then there is a big option again, and that is that Frans Timmermans will become prime minister. He will lead a coalition with the VVD, potentially the NSA as well. And then they only need a fourth party, and that can either be BBB or D66, for example. So if he is really open in governing with the VVD again, then there are two more options. And I think the third nuclear option is new elections. But given that nobody wants to govern with the PVV, and given that how Wilders is doing in the polls currently, he is, I think, around 50 seats or something. So that's even a 12-seat win over his seat number at November 22nd. I don't think that is an option that anyone finds favorable. So
apart from him.
That is... apart from Wilders, of course, even though I still doubt a little bit that he actually wants to govern, but okay. Those are the two options. Either we will have a coalition with these four parties, or Frans Timmermans will likely become prime minister.
Which is what he wanted all along, which is why he left Brussels.
Yes, and he has been patiently waiting for this opportunity, and it's not a coincidence that a couple of weeks before the, you know, hard deadline for this potential coalition, he starts to give in and open the door a little bit for the VVD. All right, enough formation news.
Yeah, perfect. This Saturday, one of the most solemn events in the Dutch calendar takes place, Remembrance Day, when the country falls silent at 8 p.m. for 2 minutes to remember the country's war dead. The ceremony is so valued that trains stop, there are no takeoffs and landings at Schiphol Airport, shops have to shut early, and restaurants and bars ask their guests to be quiet. But this year, even Remembrance Day has become shrouded in controversy and the knock-on effect of the war between Israel and Hamas. So much so that the number of people allowed onto the dam to witness the main event, which is attended by the King and Queen and many other dignitaries, has been halved in an effort to head off the risk of demonstrations and disruption.
And what exactly are the organisers worried about?
Well, they fear that the event could be captured basically by pro-Palestine campaigners. And according to the parole, the police had received indications that there could be some form of protest. They also refer to the events at the opening of the Holocaust Museum last month, which, if you remember, was the subject of noisy demonstrations and led to that uncomfortable photo of a Holocaust survivor and his granddaughter being jeered by the crowd. So officials have now decided to cut the size of the crowd, search everyone being admitted, and to ban flags, banners and other accoutrements that could be used as a tool to demonstrate. Registration for one of the 10,000 places was only open for a day, and in true Dutch fashion, a few people have been trying to make a few euros out of it as well by selling their tickets on Marktplaats.
Obviously that too has angered the organisers, and understandably so. Did you catch the ophef of the May 4th ballplank?
Yes, I did see that as well. Yes, yeah, a hotel that was offering people the chance to reserve a spot for drinks and snacks while watching the ceremony, which was
On its rooftop bar. Yeah,
you can't.
Very distasteful indeed. Yes, and this is not the only time there's been trouble at the main ceremony of Dodahead Denking.
No, not at all. In 2010, a man disrupted the commemorations by screaming during the 2 minute silence and caused a massive panic, and dozens of people were injured. He was eventually jailed for about a year. I mean, I've been on the dam during the ceremony, and it's really easy to imagine what a panic would do there. You're so closely packed together. And when I was there, a bunch of tourists got on everyone's nerves. They had, you know, big backpacks on, and they were trying to push their way through the crowd and talking loudly, you know. Well, you can imagine they got rather quickly silenced by people around them. But it's an extraordinary thing. It's definitely worth going once, you know, not this year. Obviously, you can't, but it's worth going to see.
Yeah, I've been to Dam Square also a couple of times, and it really is quite an extremely moving place to be at that time. And this year I'm going to the Waalsdorper Vlakte, which is in The Hague, which is the ceremony with the big bell. And I've never been there, and I also want to want to experience how Dodahead Denking is at that particular place. The Waalsdorper Vlakte is a spot in the dunes north of The Hague where resistance fighters during the war would be executed. So it is
going there, because that's a place I would single out in my list of, you know, where to go, because that is the most extraordinary spot. I mean, go there when it's not the ceremony. It's also incredibly moving.
Indeed,
But, you know, every town and village has got something going on.
Literally every municipality. You live in a village, and at every war ceremony, something is organized, usually with the help of the local scouting. They are always involved, and also on Dam Square, by the way. Worth going. And if you're not going anywhere, the ceremony is broadcasted live on television on, I think, at least 10 channels or something. Stay silent for 2 minutes at 8 p.m. That is always very touching.
It is a very touching thing, yeah.
And Gordon and I, we just published our May special episode for Patreon supporters. We dedicated this episode on May 4th and May 5th. So if you want to know more about Dode Herdenking, National Memorial Day, which happens on May 4th, and on May 5th, the Netherlands celebrates Liberation Day. So it is really this this tandem of 2 days, right? Commemoration on one day, celebration on the other. Then become a Patreon supporter and you will be able to listen to our special episode. Is there also a website you can visit?
If you go to www.4nen5mei.nl, that's from the official organising committee. You can find out everything. Everywhere to go, there's an interactive map so you can pick your thing, and you can also find out all about the Liberation Day festivals as well, which take place on May the 5th. There are 14 of those. It's going to be not great weather, but you know, who knows what the weather's doing most of the time. Yeah. But you know, we have the remembrance, and then we have the party.
We'll have a link to this website in the liner notes. Turkey is backing outgoing Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte as the new NATO chief, according to Dutch media on Monday, and they were citing both Turkish and NATO sources. Rutte flew privately to Istanbul on Friday for a meeting with the Turkish president, Recep Erdogan, who had been skeptical about Rutte's candidacy for NATO's secretary generalship. And I don't know who Rutte's spin doctor is, but he did an excellent job, because every story on this trip specified, emphasized that Rutte paid for the ticket himself, and it wasn't he didn't use the government's official plane. So and I'm saying it again, so it's clearly working. Maybe if Rutte is actually going to NATO, his spin doctor can join NSC, because I think they need a better communication advisor.
They certainly do. But you know, what did they talk about then? I mean,
yeah, that is unknown. Unfortunately, they met for 35 minutes. Apparently, Rutte arrived in Istanbul in the morning, and he had to wait for late in the evening until Erdogan finally received him. I mean, Rutte, some international leaders will find that very offensive, right? And they will angrily go back to their country. But Rutte is very, he can take this. He gladly takes this.
And he wants the job, doesn't he?
He wants the job, yeah. So he will suffer through these humiliations. It's unknown what they were actually talking about. Rutte afterwards said the talks had been extremely positive, which can mean anything. But yeah, according to these media outlets, the outcome was very good for Rutte, because Turkey apparently is supporting Rutte's candidacy, even though NSC wasn't convinced, I noticed, because I was reading NSC's headline and they said, yeah, it's not, Erdogan is still leaving Rutte in the dark, but all the other media outlets say that it's a done deal. Rutte, of course, needs the support of all 32 member states of NATO to become Jens Stoltenberg's successor. And while the US, UK, Germany and France and other countries have openly supported him, other countries such as Hungary, Slovakia and Romania are openly opposed. Romania has a counter candidate. President Klaus Iohannis has put himself forward as an alternative to Rutte. But he has gathered minimal backing, and yeah, he is kind of expected to withdraw anytime soon. And when that happens, Romania is expected to back Rutte, followed by Slovakia, because Slovakia is still supporting the Romanian president. Most resistance, however, comes from Hungary, where Viktor Orbán has told reporters previously that we are waiting for the next Dutch prime minister, that is the problem.
And he could be waiting for quite a long time, yeah, then, couldn't he?
I think so too. Rutte is, of course, the second senior leader of government in the EU. He's outranked by Viktor Orbán, and their relationship has been challenging at some times in the recent past, Viktor Orbán tends to, you know, play hard to get, but at the end walk off while there is a vote, because he has to go to the bathroom. And
That was very clever, that one, I remember. Yeah,
that was indeed very clever. He will give in eventually, but it's sometimes comes with a cost. Current NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg will leave on October 1st at the latest. It was initially expected that Rutte's appointment would be announced on April 4th, but gathering unanimous support proved to be more difficult than expected. And NATO sources are now saying that the announcement comes during an informal meeting of NATO's defense ministers in Prague at the end of May.
I wonder how Rutte will get there when he goes to attend that meeting. Will he use the government jet or will he pay for himself?
I think he will drive with his old Saab and hopes that that he will not strand somewhere between Austria and Prague.
So, Paul, there's been a lot of news on the sustainability front in the Netherlands this week, but unfortunately, most of it seems to imply things are not going the way we might have hoped.
Yeah, we have a bunch of stories here. Where do we start? The sun has been is gone here in Delft, so let's start with solar panels. They probably are very happy with the rest of the day because it was very sunny on Thursday.
Well, yes, that you would think that, but it does actually depend because more and more of them are having to pay to feed the excess electricity they produce back into the national grid. It's been ongoing for a while, but this week, Eneco, one of the big three, said it would be charging users something like 11 cents a kilowatt hour for the energy they're putting back into the grid. Now, that doesn't mean if it's very sunny, you should switch off your panels, of course, because you can still use that electricity when you need it, so it's cheaper, but you are paying for it in effect. It's just not the same, really, is it? And Essent and Vattenfall, the other two big companies, told the Algemene Dagblad that they are also looking at introducing some sort of fee, but have not worked out what yet, which means basically every company will have some kind of system. But there's three different ways that they're doing it. So it's a total mess, frankly. I don't have solar panels. Do you have solar panels?
Yeah, my building has, but we have a collective energy contract. So I never pay for my electricity. I always get money back, but that is probably going to end. I imagine.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, our energy company Vattenfall thinks we've got solar panels on the roof, and we don't. So you know, we've told them, and
that's interesting.
It's a long and very complicated story, but we have no idea how much energy we use because of these mysterious solar panels, which we don't have. But there you go. Anyway, that's solar panels.
And what else is news? Heat pumps. There is something with heat pumps.
Yeah, heat pumps. I mean, we're all supposed to be installing heat pumps, but it seems that the demand for them is declining. They're meant to replace the traditional gas-fired central heating boilers, but the Makers Association said this week that sales have actually more than halved year on year. In the first quarter of 2023, consumers bought 42,000 heat pumps, but in the same period this year, they only bought 20,000. And manufacturers have been investing heavily in expanding production since the government announced, you know, that they were going to phase out the traditional systems. One of them, I don't know how you pronounce it, but Remeha.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
One of the big guys can apparently build 140,000 a year. So they're not going to be too happy.
I know how to pronounce their company name because they have a very distinctive jingle on the radio. I wasn't aware that what the company was actually doing, but I remember their jingle.
Well, now you know they're building 120,000 heat pumps a year that nobody wants.
Yeah.
Seems to me.
What are the reasons of this decline?
They're saying, first of all, there's a lack of new housing because, of course, we're not building any new houses and they're all supposed to get heat pumps. Gas prices have fallen, so it's not that interesting to get rid of your gas boiler. And that also means, you know, it'll take longer to earn back your investment. I mean, these things are not cheap.
No.
6,000 to 12,000 euros to install one. Which is about three times the price of a gas boiler. And I mean, yeah, there are subsidies. You can get about a third of the cost back. But, you know, many homes, you need to have proper insulation. Otherwise, there's no point in having it anyway. And I don't know. The government was very rash, I think, when it said by 2026, all central heating boilers would have to be heat pumps. It's not going to happen, I don't think. I can't imagine it. But, you know, that's not the end of the bad news.
So heat pumps and solar panels, a lot of problems with them, but how about a green investment fund?
Ah, yes. Well, here there are problems too. In fact, it seems that more than half the Dutch investment funds, which call themselves sustainable, are still investing in the fossil fuel sector and will not meet new EU rules when they come into effect this year. Dutch news platforms Follow the Money and Investigo were part of a team that looked at almost 1,300 European investment funds with combined assets under management of 525 billion euros. And all of them claimed to be sustainable, but some 40 of them still had fossil investments. And in the Netherlands, they looked at 200 funds and found that more than half of them still invested too heavily in oil and gas companies. In fact, the European guidelines state that funds with an environmental term such as green or net zero in their name shouldn't invest in companies that derive more than 1% of their revenues from coal, 10% of their revenues from oil, or 50% of their revenues from natural gas.
It's still a lot.
Well, if you add that up, it means you can actually have 61% of your investment in fossil fuel and call yourself green. So I don't really understand that one at all. And ABN AMRO, I don't understand them either. They're one of the chief offenders, apparently, according to Follow the Money. And they told them that their ESG funds can include fossil companies based on the client's preferences. Different criteria, including exclusions, apply to the different sustainability profiles. Now, I don't know if you're any of the wiser. I have no idea what they're trying to say, but I guess it means if you want to pretend you've got green investments, but still want to put money into coal and oil, you can. I think we call that greenwashing, actually.
I think so too. I think that's the word for this. Yeah, it seems quite odd, and also strange that the European Union's guidelines allow 50% of companies' revenues to come from natural gas and still call themselves green. I mean, it has to do with Germany, I imagine, right? Because Germany is making this transition from coal to natural gas, and in their view, this is a green development, while we in the Netherlands are moving away from natural gas. That is what we see as sustainable. So maybe that's the reason. But I think from our perspective, from the Netherlands, this doesn't seem to be a green option.
Mind you, I mean, if you look at the fact that we're not actually buying any more solar panels or slowing our solar panel, we're not buying heat pumps, we're not really moving away from gas and into renewables either, are we?
That's true. Dutch Eurovision hopeful Joost Klein set off for Sweden on Monday with not one, not two, but 20 suitcases. Which airline is he flying? Because whenever I try to check something in extra, I have to pay a huge sum of money. But 20 suitcases seems a bit exaggerated. And he also brought a big dose of self-confidence to Malmö. Klein told the Algemeen Dagblad that he is my own biggest competitor. And he had the rehearsals this week, and that didn't go as well as everyone in the Netherlands hoped for. Until his rehearsal on Wednesday, I think he was number three on the bookies list, and he showed what he was going to do in the semifinals. He brought out a big bird, I believe. It was a fluffy thing. It wasn't the Brexit monster. I think he should have brought in the Brexit monster.
That would have been such a smart move. Except nobody outside Holland knows the Brexit monster, Paul.
And the UK, I think, a bit. Surely some people remember it because it was widely covered in British newspapers at the time. But it's still, I think it's already 5 years ago or something, right? Yeah. I would have liked it if the Brexit Muppet would have an appearance on the stage in Malmö. But he didn't impress anyone with this rehearsal. And he's even he's slowly descending in the order of the bookies, because I think he... Immediately after his rehearsal, he was number four, and he's now number five on the bookies ranking. So he's not doing well.
I think that's pretty good, you know, fifth place, when you think about it.
There's nothing that you need to be number one, and all the other places don't matter, right? We need to view number one.
Well, that's a very good way of putting it, yes.
The bookies now think that Italy has a better chance of winning, and
Ukraine. Italy are now third, Ukraine are now fourth, and Joost and his big blue bird are number five.
Yeah, and the 26-year-old will perform Europapa on stage for a live audience on May 9th, ahead of Saturday's final, which, according to the bookies, at least he's certain to qualify for. So at least we have that in the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, will he be watching?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's on Saturday, right? So I don't think I will make it through the voting segment, which always drags on for ages. But it is. I always watch it, and I always am reminded why the Brits wanted to leave Europe, because it is usually very. Painful for the ears what Europe puts on the stage.
That might be why they're not bringing the Brexit monster then.
But I think I will be watching, and I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Eurovision, because it makes Twitter, it is always the best week on Twitter, I think, everyone commenting on whatever happens on the stage of Eurovision, but I really always hate the music, I have to say, so I'm not going to watch for the music.
So you're not going to be putting on your tracksuit and hacking around the place then?
No, I will not do that. Will you?
God, no.
Are you going to watch?
No.
Probably not. I also never voted.
No, I like the 10 minutes where they just do the summary of all the songs, and that's fine. That'll do me. I don't need to see any more.
Yeah.
God, no. Blue Muppets.
That's more than enough, the summary.
Nasty tracksuits, that's fine. I don't need to see any more, thank you. Talking of tracksuits.
Yes, sports.
And in the absence of Gordon, I get the short straw.
Yeah.
So, the big story in football, apart from the fact that PSV is still not officially Eredivisie Kampioen, is that Robin van Persie appears to be heading for Heerenveen for his first head coaching job. Van Persie stopped playing the game professionally only in 2019, you know. It's not that long ago, really.
Oh.
He has 102 caps for the Netherlands and 50 goals for Oranje, which makes him the top, all-time top scorer.
I was thinking, mathematically speaking, 5 years isn't that long, but we had a whole pandemic in between, right?
Yeah.
So I think that adds to the feeling of how long ago it is.
He for me seems to be, you know, because we share the same name, you kind of always know Robins, you know, and he sort of seems to have been around forever. But he will, according to the AD and others, succeed Kees van Wonderen at Heerenveen, who announced his departure in March. He currently is the head youth coach at Rotterdam club Feyenoord.
Okay.
But so far, neither club has said anything about the move, so it's all speculation. And Feyenoord has not officially commented on Liverpool's bid to lure away head coach Arne Slot either, at least not as we record this. But I could say that's the big football news, but none of it's been confirmed.
And is this all on the sports front for this week?
No, Paul, not at all. Because I knew you would be leaving the sport to me, I decided to compile a list of all the big sporting events heading our way this summer, starting with your favourite cricket and ending with motor racing.
Good.
I thought you'd be pleased. Yes, the Netherlands will host Scotland and Ireland for a cricket T20 triangular series from May the 18th to the 24th, and that comes ahead of the World Cup in June. The series will be played entirely at the VRA ground in Amstelveen, if you want to go along and have a look, Paul. Then, of course, the big event in the Dutch rugby calendar, the Amsterdam Rugby Sevens, takes place on June the 1st and the 2nd. Elite and social sevens teams, along with an unlimited supply of beer at the Eendracht in Amsterdam. Will you be going?
Okay. Yeah, well, I am. I enjoy watching rugby. So, there is an unlimited supply of beer. So, I might go.
Okay.
Who knows?
Good. I'll see you there. then we've got the European Athletics Championships in Rome in the second week of June. With Femke Bol and Lieke Klaver hoping to take 400 meter titles, of course. And you could see that as a bit of a warm up for the Olympics, of course, which take place a month later. And then, of course, we've got three-time winners Germany staging the European Football Championships from June the 14th to July the 14th. And Orania are in Group D with Poland, Austria and France and are first on the pitch against Poland on June the 16th. And then, of course, there is the Tour de France. Are you a fan, Paul?
No. I hate speed cycling. I always find it very interesting that day in the Tour de France always starts at around noon. Then that's when they start cycling, and they only start broadcasting it from 2 to 3 p.m. So 1/3 of the race isn't interesting enough for broadcasters to actually show it on TV. So I always say that I'm not the only one who is bored by this. Even the professionals don't care about 1/3 of these races.
Well, you know, I find the Dutch obsession with the Tour de France absolutely fascinating. I mean, I think people are glued to their screens. Nothing happens. They talk about it every day. Yeah. I used to work at the Financieel Dagblad, Dutch financial paper, and I happened to sit next to the TV. And nobody did any work. I'm surprised there was a newspaper because everybody was just watching this cycling. It is the Tour.
And nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Yeah. I mean, I've been caught up in it three times in my life as well, which is fascinating because, you know, the roads are closed for 4 hours before the cyclists come past. And then 1 second later, it's over.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And people are waiting the entire day on a mountaintop.
Man.
For this 1 second, yeah, and then they joined the queue, the traffic jam, to go down because that always takes the better part of the night.
Yeah. Oh, it's extraordinary. But you know, Paul, if we want to have our attitude revised, the women's Grand Prix, well, it's called the Tour de Femmes. It takes place in August, and this year it's starting in Rotterdam and Dordrecht.
So, not again.
Yes, so we can go along and have a look and get some see some cycling action. And there, Dutch rider Demi Vollering, she took the title last year, is firmly at the top of this year's favourites for the women's event. So, you know, that could be a good one for us. And then I thought we could end the little tour of summer sport with the
Tour
de Sport at the seaside resort of Zandvoort. Which is, excellent. Of course, the host for the Dutch Grand Prix for the third, I think it is, time in a row on August the 25th. And Max Verstappen, who was born in Belgium and lives in Monaco, is the Dutch favourite to win.
That's right. And this is always the point in the podcast. We also point out that Mathieu van der Poel, the celebrated Dutch speed cyclist, has a similar situation. He was actually born in Belgium. He still lives there. He holds a Dutch passport, but that's the only thing Dutch about him. Just like Max Verstappen. So
we've got what's her name?
Femke Bol.
Well, yeah, we've got Femke. Femke's going to win. She's a star. She and Lieke, I think we've got them for gold. Well,
Demi Vollering.
There you go. We've got her. All the women again, you see. Hockey, you know. Yep. Oh, it's all fine. It'll be fine. You'll have a lovely summer of sport, Paul. I'm telling you. And don't forget the cricket.
No, I won't. That's all that we have for you this week. This podcast is a production of Dutch News, which can be found online at dutchnews.nl. We will include links to everything we've talked about today in the liner notes. You can get in touch with us by email to podcast@dutchnews.nl. If you want to help us out, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating. You can also back us on Patreon at patreon.com/dutchnewsnl and earn yourself a free shout out on the podcast. My thanks to Robin Pascoe and not to Gordon Derek this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time because I think we're going to take the week off for Ascension Day because, unlike the rest of the world, in the Netherlands this is a thing. And even better than that, there's always a Friday. The Friday after Ascension Day is always a day off too, or at least if you take it off, and that means a nice long weekend for you to sit inside and enjoy the thunderstorms from that are raging over your head.
Enjoy. Don't make me laugh.
Sorry.
I mean, I've got to put a straight face on, Paul. It's not good. Yeah.